cheap transactions, right? Everybody wants cheap transactions and cheap money. Okay, so then why aren't they Bitcoin, right? If that's what the market wants, then why is Bitcoin accruing all the value? It's the reality is that it just has better shelling points. It is, you know, it is the actual coin that was made at the right time. It has the right characteristics. And going back to what, you know, what Nick said. Oh, great. I just drew a blank. All right. Somebody else can go.
Oh, yeah. Can I jump in?
Get it.
Let's see. So have you played chess before?
Oh. I mean, I know the rules, but I haven't played. Okay.
So, chess has been played for, you know, probably like 1,000 years, maybe more. And if you change the rules to chess, who's going to play with you? You know, it's, you can make another version of chess with better pieces that move faster. You can have faster games, but what you're missing is the whole network effect of people that actually play chess. And so
basically you're trying to convince everyone to change the rules, so they all have to believe the new rules now.
Right. So for Bitcoin, you know, it's got monetary properties that are, you know, written into the code. And so a lot of coins, these altcoins or shit coins, they're changing the rules just slightly of the monetary policy and trying to say that it's a better game. But what it's what they're missing out on are the emergent properties of Bitcoin. And some of those are censorship resistance and decentralization. And they go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Like one example of that is there's this guy named Craig Wright, and he tries to tell everyone he's Satoshi, who made BTC Bitcoin. He's not. He's a scammer. And he made a coin called Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, or BSV for short. And that doesn't have any of the properties really of Bitcoin BTC. Like, he was even censoring some people and blocking their transactions. And that's a huge problem because that's extremely centralized. And he was saying, oh, if you're dealing drugs on my blockchain, I'm going to kick you off of it and you're not going to be allowed to use it. Like, that's a huge problem that someone can just, you know, kick someone off or, you know, censor them. And then Roger Ver, I don't know how you say his last name. He's the creator of Bitcoin Cash, which is also another scam. Okay, so Bitcoin BTC has a small block. He doesn't like that. He wants bigger blocks, which obviously the market doesn't want and people don't want, so no money went to Bitcoin Cash. Since it's centralized and he runs the blockchain by himself pretty much, he was able to impose a miner tax, and he was taxing the miners for whatever reason he had. And that, again, is a big no-no and why Bitcoin BTC has yet another huge advantage over that.
Talking about scammers, like about a half a year ago, on my campus, I saw a guy, and he's like, oh, we have a club, we're teaching you about cryptocurrency and Forex. I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. I want to, like, come and learn something. Then I realized, like, I never showed up to their meetings or anything. I see that he started, like, pushing me, like, oh, when are you coming? You're missing out on this great opportunity, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've realized, like, right away that he's, like, one of the scammers. But again, how do I differentiate between people who are actually know their stuff people that are just trying to like scam you and they do not know anything, they're just saying, oh, look at me, I'm so smart, I'm making money.
If they are Bitcoin only, BTC only, they are not a scammer. If they try and sell you anything that other than Bitcoin, they are a scammer. Whether they say they're not, whether they say, oh, I'm not a scammer, I have good intentions and I'm trying to have this currency work, I don't care what they say. If they try and sell you anything that's not BTC, they are scamming you, whether they want to or not. Because of what we said earlier about how all altcoins lose value in Bitcoin, they are essentially telling you to buy their shitcoin and have you hold it, you know, and they'll say, oh, it'll make you this much US dollars, but it's going to lose Bitcoin value. And we're transitioning into a Bitcoin world. You don't want more US dollars. In the long term, you don't want more US dollars. You want more Bitcoin. So it's a pretty famous Bitcoin article. It's called Everyone's a Scammer. And it pretty much teaches you to do what Jessifer said in the chat, to don't trust people, verify. Like,
I never trust with money. Like, whenever someone tells me to do something with my money, I'm like, mm-mm.
That's good. Like, even like, you're new to the space and we're all trustworthy.
Honestly, I do not trust like everything that is. I will say, okay, I started just putting $10. My belief is I can afford to lose $10. And like, if I start putting $10 a week, it's like, okay, I'm going to Starbucks 2 times a week. So now I'm just gonna go. And if it loses value, okay, then it loses value. I just like forget about it. But that makes sense.
One of the main things I want to get across is I consider all of us in this group very knowledgeable, very trustworthy, but you don't know us. You should take what we are telling you, but go and also do your own research and verify for yourself, because, you know, Coin Icarus just linked the Everyone's a Scammer article.
Thank you.
And what I'm telling you is the honest truth. What we're all telling you is what's best. But then again, you should also go do your own research to verify for yourself. Because I would hate to, you know, have you be in this situation right now. But instead of it being, you know, Bitcoin maximalists, have it be a bunch of shitcoiners trying to sell you stuff. Like, do what you want with your money. Like, do what you think is best. And always feel free to reach out to us. But always do your own research. Like,
yes, thank you. I mean, I realize that because I always tell people, like, even though I'm finance major, I tell my friends, guys, you shouldn't spend this much money. Like, this is not worth it. Or, like, explain them even, like, how credit cards work, how to open an account in the bank, how all of that stuff. And so I tell them, please, do your own research. You cannot just rely on me. Because this is your money. You earned that. Like, I'm not responsible for that.
100%. And another good way to, like pick out a scammer is usually, I think my mic's really low, hold on, is usually if they're really, really nice to you, if they're like super nice to you and they want you to send them money, then you can almost guarantee that they're a scammer. So like, if people are telling you to send them Bitcoins, just like pretty much automatically consider them a scammer. Like, we don't, you know, we're not asking you for any money. We just want you to understand the money you have. And so, like, a lot of times the bigger assholes are the ones that you can almost trust more, because they don't want your money. They just want you to know what you're doing. So like, when people come to you with like really nice, like, oh, you know, like, we're the better coin, we're more inclusive, you know, like, we'll make you more money in the long run. And you're like, yeah, okay. And then they're like, here, send me some Bitcoins. And you just be like, all right, like, get out of here. Cause like, you shouldn't be sending anyone any money unless you know them and you know that they're like going to send you, I don't know, like a product or something. Otherwise, like, everyone's a scammer.
And also, we're not trying to get you to buy anything. Like, before you buy Bitcoin, even though I know you said you already own some, like, go out and do more research, like, really understand what you're buying and, like, what to do after you buy it, you know, HODL, you know, safely secure it, yada, yada, yada. I'm assuming all of our advice is just stay away from anything that's not BTC because they're all scams. But again, do your own research.
Or even sorry to cut you off, Nick. Like, people will like come in your DMs. Like, I've been scammed before by like people coming into my DMs and I think that they're a friend and they're not a friend, and they ask you to like do them a favor and just send a little Bitcoin over. And you just get caught up in the moment and you don't realize that, you know, one letter's off and it's just like a scammer trying to get Bitcoins from you. So like, literally, if people are asking you for Bitcoins, just like consider them a scammer, even if they're not. Like, you're, like you said, like you're better safe than sorry by just considering anyone that wants any of your money to be a scammer. Unless you're like, if you're buying a product from someone and you know they're selling products, and like, then you know, like, it's money, so you can buy things with it. But if people are just asking you for your Bitcoins, then just consider them a scammer.
Or asking you to invest in their shit coins. That's a big red flag.
Yeah.
Like, or, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add, also, if they try to get you to buy Bitcoin from them, you know, like... I mean, there's, you know, there's plenty of, there's that type of scam too, right? You go and you get, you know, you go and you buy the Bitcoin from them and you never actually get any Bitcoin, or you end up paying a really high premium for it. Sorry, go on.
And just to keep in mind, there's no undo button for Bitcoin. So once you send it, there's no stopping it, which is a feature and tells you that it is decentralized and not under centralized control.
Just basically consider everyone a scammer.
Like, yeah.
It's a lot easier.
Because they said it was on campus and I realized that they were scammers, but I was a tutor on campus. I was tutoring math. And all of my students, they were like, oh, I joined that club. I'm like, guys, this is a scam. Like, you should not trust them. They're like, no, like, I start earning money and all of that. And they just try to get you to use that platform, but I'm not going to use that platform. Like, please stay away from that. Like, mm-mm. And I do not know how to explain to people that.
Even if they have, like, good intentions, like, let's say that guy just found out what crypto is, and he's like, oh, this is cool, I want to start a club at school and get other people who's interested in it. You got to remember, the only reason people are into cryptocurrency, not Bitcoin, I mean altcoins, if you're into shitcoins, it's because you're either A, a scammer, or B, you're uneducated on Bitcoin and don't realize why, you know, Bitcoin is superior in every way and how it makes all other currencies irrelevant. So when I was a shit coiner, and I'm sure other people can say the same, I was retarded. I didn't know shit about anything, and I felt like the man. I was like, man, hearing all this stuff for the first time, I was like, man, I'm so smart. I'm outsmarting the government. You know, using crypto, getting by, you know, not using banks, blah, blah, blah. I'm so cool, blah, blah, blah. I was super stupid, and 100% of people into altcoins and shitcoins are really stupid, and they don't know what they're talking about. And it really pisses me off when they try and shove their shitcoins in other people's faces, saying, buy my coin, it's super good, when it's not. So it's, even if people do have the correct intentions, you just got to stay away from them. You know, do your own thing, do your own research. If anyone tells you you should buy a coin, don't. Like, I know that's pretty, you know, ironic since I just said, you know, buy Bitcoin, you know, BTC only. But, really, like, do your own research, you know? I sound like a nice guy, but I could be a scammer. I'm not, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Pretty much, I mean, before I met Edie, not before I met her, when I found out about all Bitcoin, and whenever I saw someone on social media saying like, oh, Bitcoin or something like Ripple, whatever, like, that's a scammer right away. I did not trust people that were like, yes, I did not understand the maximalism thing on all the cryptocurrencies. I was always believing that those are just traders. They just like gamblers, that they're just scammers. And then when I actually met a guy that tried to scam me, I'm like, mm-mm, this is not working. And then I started having a conversation with Katie, and she started explaining me some stuff, and I did like a little bit of my own research, and that's how I realized, okay, so people are not scammers, and these are scammers.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, you'll notice that Bitcoiners don't really care if you buy Bitcoin or not.
Mm-hmm.
Just that you know the difference between like why it is that you're here to, you know, store value or invest. Like if you're going to do it, that you actually do it right and you get the right thing. It doesn't matter if you actually do it or not, because Bitcoiners are trying to get as much Bitcoin as they can. So.
Yeah. Like, shitcoiners, they want you to buy their shitcoin, so you pump up the price and exactly. they get more money. But Bitcoiners, like, obviously, like, we all want everyone to use Bitcoin and have it because it's what's best for people, but we know how much Bitcoin has to grow, and we know how dirt cheap it is right now. You know, Bitcoin's almost $10,000. But in comparison to where it is going in the future, or where we believe it's going, based on a load of different things, like we all have our different price predictions. I want to stay away from that. Just focus on actual Bitcoin education. But let's say Bitcoin does shoot to these new all-time highs and everyone makes, quote unquote, a lot of money or a lot of more US dollars. Because if I hold one full Bitcoin right now, up to $1 million, yeah, I have more US dollars, but I still only have one Bitcoin. And to me, that's a problem. I want more of it. So if you get into Bitcoin, I want you to take it slow. I want you to get in when you feel comfortable. It doesn't really bother me as a person when you get in or not, because if the longer it takes you to get in, the more time it gives me to accumulate, because there's only 21 million coins. And if you do decide to get in quicker, that's great. And you just help out the whole community, and you help out the ecosystem by buying and holding or transacting or doing whatever. It's a win-win either way. So it doesn't particularly matter to me, you know, when or if not you buy. You understand? Like shitcoiners, they want you. They say, buy my coin, buy my coin, buy my coin. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, any Bitcoins you buy, that means that there's less Bitcoins for me to buy. And that's kind of what Nick's trying to say. So, like, just if we, like, we just want more Bitcoin because we think it's
there's a limited supply, yes.
Yeah, there's only 21 million.
And a lot of shitcoins say, oh my gosh, we're scarce, just like Bitcoin. You know, Litecoin only has, what, 84 million or something? Or I don't even, like, is Bitcoin Cash and SV, or are those also 21 million? I don't even know. And you also got to remember, those are not scarce because you can always make more of it. Because since altcoins do not have any network effects, they don't have any liquidity, it doesn't matter if they're hard capped or not, because you can always just copy and paste the code and recreate it with the same network, you know, the same shit network effects it already has. It makes no sense to hold something that you can just constantly recreate over and over again. That's why when Bitcoin was born, it went through that time of complete uncertainty. Like, people were like, you know, an online peer-to-peer currency. Like, it was something only, you know, cryptographic nerds traded at the beginning, and like no one really took seriously except, you know, the people who were super into it. And a lot of people kind of dismissed it, you know. A lot of people had hard drives full of like 500 Bitcoin, 1,000 Bitcoin that were essentially worth nothing at the time, and they threw away and lost forever. Like, those coins are lost forever. They'll never return, and it just makes those the rest of our Bitcoin that much more scarce and valuable. And let's say if when Litecoin was created, for example, or Bitcoin Cash, you don't go through that uncertainty period. Everyone's like, okay, I know this is going to go up in price, let me just buy it. Like, you know what I mean?
Very volatile, so it's kind of hard to buy things with it. So when do you guys believe that the volatility problem is going to be solved?
A great book I would recommend reading is The Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous. He clears up a ton of good stuff. It would be a great read for you. So the volatility, Bitcoin, before it becomes a means of exchange, it has to be a store of value first. Bitcoin is super volatile because it's the easiest asset to liquidate, in my opinion. And there's other reasons for it, but the reason I see it is, let's say, not too long ago, Bitcoin dropped 50% in one day. Why was that? It was because people were panicking of coronavirus, and not just Bitcoin, but stocks fell, like pretty much every asset ever fell. And why did Bitcoin fall so hard? It's because you don't have to ask anyone's permission to, you know, buy or sell it. So if you wanted to sell your coins, you send them to an exchange and you just sell them. For stocks, you got to contact your, you know, whoever you're investing with. You got to wait for the operating hours. You know, those things take time. Like, they can't rise and fall as quick as Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's a truly free market currency, and there's just nothing else on earth like it. It's a complete class of its own. And as time goes on, if you look, like, if you go do some research about Bitcoin in the past, Bitcoin used to be so much more volatile, and it's gone down a tremendous amount. And as time goes on, the volatility is going to continue decreasing just through the spread of coins and so many other different people holding it. A lot of people say stuff like, again, I don't like doing price predictions, you know, do your own research, but people say like, oh, if you're not comfortable buying Bitcoin now because it's too volatile, just wait until it's 5 to 10 million, when it's like not that volatile. And just as Koiniker said, yeah, volatility is a feature, it's not a bug. I would not have the amount of Bitcoin I have today if it was not for volatility. The all-time high it was previously at was 20,000 in 2017, and then it dropped. You know, it went up and dropped, went up and dropped. The low was $3,000. I am so thankful for that, because it gave me a chance to accumulate. You know, we've been in the $3,000 to $10,000 range for a long time now. I am super thankful for that. I'm sure other people are. I know Optimus, Jessifer, Coin Icarus, and Dex here are all super thankful for the cheap Bitcoin. And it's pretty much, over time, Bitcoin just transfers to the strongest hands, and those strong hands hold them. And those are the hodlers of last resort who never sell. And yeah, volatility is not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. And just to like answer your question a little more directly, we really don't know when the price will be less volatile, because we're basically just waiting for more people to come into the market and hold. So you can think of Bitcoin like, there's a good analogy of Bitcoin's like a rubber ducky in a bathtub. And so when you get into the bathtub, the water rises. And so and Bitcoin would be the rubber ducky. And so we're basically just waiting for, you know, people and the capital to come into Bitcoin for it to for the price to get to a certain point where when one person in the market isn't able to really move the price, because right now Bitcoin's so small that someone with, you know, a couple hundred millions of dollars is able to drastically move the market. But at a certain point, because it's money, and you want to use money, you want to be holding the money that has the most use across the widest amount of participants. So at a certain point, once everyone's holding Bitcoin, it's just like cash, then the price will be less volatile, because when someone sells Bitcoins, it doesn't move the market as much. But like Nick said, it's free market money. So like, you know, there's no Federal Reserve to make sure that the price stays constant. It's just all of us still holding our Bitcoins and realizing that, you know, number go up, and that in you know, 4, 5, 10 years, if we're still holding onto these Bitcoins, then they're going to be at a price that's higher than today. And so the more we have people that believe the same thing, as Coin Icarus said, it's called a shelling point. As long as, you know, we all believe that these rules are going to stay the same and they're going to stay constant, then the price will be a lot less volatile into the future. So none of us know when it's going to be less volatile, but like Nick saying, like, volatility is a feature. It's a blessing for us, because we want to acquire as much Bitcoin as we can, and anytime the price falls down, there's millions of us that are thinking the same thing. It's like, oh, cheaper sats, like I can get more Bitcoins for my dollar. And so, like, you know, the price is going to go up soon enough, but at the meantime, like, let the price go down because I want to acquire more Bitcoin.
That's also one reason why Bitcoin will never go to zero, is that if Bitcoin were to drop so much, after a while, it's kind of like everyone's like, okay, all the hodlers, I mean, are like, okay, this is super cheap. It's time to buy up, you know, not just, you know, buy the dip, you know, dollar cost averaging. It's time to go ham and buy this dip. And then, like, the drop from 20,000 went to 6,000, and then it went down to 3,000, and at about 3,000, it just would not go any lower, because if it did, people would just buy it up right away. And that's happened throughout Bitcoin's history, is that it just gets so low, but then people are like, oh my god, this is just such an amazing opportunity, and everyone who understands it starts buying the hell out of it, and then the price starts to, you know, slowly go back up.
It's simple supply and demand.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I see a Bitcoin as a US dollar, that this is a currency, this is a money. Money's needed to be traded, to be like exchange for something else. I do not really see of it as an investment. I want to see it as something that I want to exchange for something. Let's say, oh, I want to buy a car. I want to use my Bitcoin to buy a car. But because the price is so volatile, should I really use my Bitcoin to buy it?
Yeah, Bitcoin, that's one thing a lot of people get wrong, is they think it's an investment. It's not an investment. It's a new money that, it, you know, one day, or you don't even have to do one day, you can buy things with Bitcoin whenever you want, if there's someone willing to accept it. But, you know, using it every day as a means of exchange, you know, everyone using it to pay for, you know, their coffee, their groceries, their school tuition, blah, 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 whatever it may be, that's going to take some time. And I just completely lost my train of thought.
I like to look at it like, so when you exchange like a dollar for, I don't know, like a peso or any other foreign currency, there's a certain exchange rate. But since the dollar is so established, it doesn't fluctuate so much unless there's some kind of political or economic turmoil in the countries. And with Bitcoin, when you exchange your dollars for Bitcoin, the price is so volatile because it's a new asset that's becoming monetized, and it's in the process of real time monetization. So, you know, right now, like Nick said, you can use it to buy things, but the best like option and the game plan that we like to think is just to HODL your Bitcoin. You just want to store value into it and plan for your future. And so you save, you know, your wealth in Bitcoin, because we know that in the future, other people will believe what we believe, and they see what we see in the world happening, like inflation and, you know, these governments doing all kinds of crazy tyrannical things to their money to control their people. And we believe in freedom. And so we'd rather have a money that isn't controlled by anyone. And in the meantime, yeah, we might not be able to quote unquote use it, but one of the characteristics of money is to hold its value, to so that when you want to buy a car, you will be able to buy a car. And it might not be today, but, you know, maybe tomorrow I want to buy that car, and, you know, maybe it'll be in a year. And then in that year, when you want to buy the car, your money has held its value. So we like to say, if you just zoom out and you look at the chart over the 11 years that Bitcoin's been out, it's increased, the price has increased, and it's gone, like we say, number go up. It's gone up and to the right. And so there's, I think it's Thiers' law, where it says good money drives out, or bad money drives out good money. And what that means is the bad money in this scenario would be the dollars, and the good money would be Bitcoin. And so you'll be spending your dollars because everyone's using it, and you can't really save value into it. And you'll be holding your Bitcoins because it's the best money that we know, based on all these properties that we've been trying to elaborate on. Does that make sense?
As far as things you can buy with it, you can buy US dollars with Bitcoin, which, I mean, that's the most widely accepted thing. If volatility is really scary, yeah, you can sell your Bitcoin for dollars. But the thing with Bitcoin is that when it makes its gains, it's only in a couple of days of the year. It's like 5 days of the year. And if you miss those 5 days, you missed out on a big portion of the gains that Bitcoin experienced over that time. So it's kind of risky for us to like part with our Bitcoin, because even for a short period, because I might miss out on those gains.
Yeah. But don't let some people like tell you, hey, like there's a lot of people on Twitter who say, oh, if you don't hold and you spend Bitcoin, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if I need to buy groceries and I need, you're always going to have to spend money in some way. And let's say, you know, there's a couple of villages in El Salvador and their fiat currency is complete garbage. These small villages, I think there's 3 or 4 of them now, and I can send you all the links to this stuff after. These small villages run entirely on Bitcoin. You know, these people are going around paying for their groceries in Bitcoin. They're not like, oh man, should I buy this food? I don't know if I want to eat today. You know, Bitcoin might boom and it might go up. It's like you're always going to need to spend money. That's just survival. You're always going to need to buy more food, you know, a place to live, you know, even treat yourself to something nice every now and then, whatever that may be, a new phone, jewelry, even something simple like going out to eat at a restaurant, fast food or fancy, you know, whatever, you know, gives you gratification. So let's say if you saved up money and you want to pay in Bitcoin for, let's say, a new car. The only thing is like kind of holding you back is you're like, oh my God, you know, my Bitcoin, the value of my Bitcoin might increase, but you're just thinking of that as an investment point of view. From an actual money point of view, yeah, go out, spend your Bitcoin, do whatever you want with it. It's just, there's just a rule of people saying, if you spend Bitcoin, you got to replace it because you don't want to have, you know, less Bitcoin over time, because you're kind of like, oh, if I would have just held on to that, I would have gained so much money. That's kind of like the guy who purchased two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin. He would have been like a billionaire or something today if he would have just held on to his Bitcoin. But spending that Bitcoin was huge for the Bitcoin space, and it was very important that that happened.
And he got to eat.
I mean, yeah, he traded... he literally traded his Bitcoin for two Papa John's pizzas. Like, that was huge. And he got, you know, real-world gratification out of that. So it's like, from not looking at it from an investment point of view, just pure money, using it to pay for real-world stuff that gives him gratification, Bitcoin did its job, and it did its job tremendously well.
Or even, like, Well, I'll let you ask another question. But even so, think of like Venezuelans right now. Their currency just hyperinflated, and I think it was something like it went up like that hyperinflated by like 1,000,000% or something like that. So there's
1 million.
Yeah. So their money is literally worthless, and I've seen photos of people just throwing it away like it's garbage. So if they were able to put whatever life savings they had into Bitcoin at the time that their money was going to go up or down 2,000,000%, whatever even that means, they were still able to hold most of their wealth in Bitcoin, and it only dropped, I think it was something like 30% or something. So they lost 30% of their wealth up to this point. But if they hold it long enough, they'll basically gain most of it back. But if they held that money in the Venezuelan peso, that they would literally, they wouldn't have any money left. So the volatility, while it in the short term is pretty bad, and it does scare a lot of people away, it's still able to store its value, and you know, you're still able to have money that you can transact worldwide and do whatever you need to do with it.
Then how do I know what is the real value of the product that I'm buying or Bitcoin?
Well, it depends like on what timeline you're looking at it. The real value is what you're paying that day for it. But the future value of your Bitcoins can be more. So, you know, in the future, you might be paying, I don't know, like the pizza, $100 million for those two pizzas at the time. That's why a lot of people will tell you, like, you shouldn't really be spending your Bitcoin, because is it really worth what you're buying? So, for instance, like, what I do personally is, like, anytime I have, like, a dollar or $10, I like American dollars, I add like another zero onto it, and I like do the mental calculation in my head, and I'm like, okay, so I can buy this for $10, or if I can put it into Bitcoin and hold it long enough, like I'm pretty sure it'll go to $100. So like, is what I'm buying worth $100? And if you're buying like something cheap that's $10, you're like, I don't know, like the opportunity costs are like, This just doesn't seem like, I feel like future me will be happier if I'm just saving this money. So it's kind of like a tricky question, because at the moment, like say that $10 was, it's subjective. Say that $10 was like, okay, I'm starving, I need to eat. Well, you know, you're better off buying some food, because you might not make it in a year to survive. But say you have, you know, $100 and you can buy food, and then you can save the other 90 or 50 or 20 or not just $10. Well, then, you know, in the future, you know, your savings will be that much more because you're able to save it. So it's just very much subjective. It's like, it's all based on you and your preferences and how you view the world. And a lot of us here view that in the future our Bitcoins will be worth more, so we're trying not to spend them as much as possible. But if we see things that we like, you know, we'll be on Lightning or something, and we'll buy little trinkets, and it's money. So, you know, I've bought in little things, and I know that in the future I might be like, oh man, that's a lot. Like, I bought like a Lightning shirt, and I don't even remember how much I paid for it, but it was like, I don't know, 50,000 sats or something. And it was like a $30 shirt at the time. And I'm pretty sure in the future I'll be laughing at the fact that this t-shirt I bought is going to be worth, you know, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars or something. There's a lot of stories like that.
Another thing you have to remember is Bitcoin is constantly going through price discovery, and it's going to get to, like, I like to think of, like, Bitcoin kind of has, like, an ultimate goal. Like, who knows how high Bitcoin will go up? You know, the U.S., I mean, governments in general, and they can just print unlimited amount of money for a Bitcoin that's limited in supply. So who really knows how high Bitcoin will go? I like to think, and I'm not going to say this just because it's my own personal price prediction, and again, I don't want to get into it, but I have a price in my head where I like to think of Bitcoin, like, getting to that as, like, the end goal. And everything else, like, leading up to that, like, whatever you do for Bitcoin, whether it's hold it, buy it, you know, sell it, it's good for Bitcoin, not bad in any way. And the thing you're saying about, like, value, like, how do you know it's value? Like, that's just one thing. It having multiple currencies, and this goes back again to, like, having multiple cryptocurrencies, it makes economic calculations so much harder. And when Bitcoin is, like, the only currency we denominate value in, it makes things so much clearer, if that makes any sense.
Or just,
like, let's say I'm thinking about, okay, if I want to buy a car, let's say the car is like 2 bitcoins, but in my head I'm thinking translating this money back into the US dollar, you know? So one day, one Bitcoin is $6,000. The other day is like $8,000. So how do I really determine the value of this car? Is it really 2 Bitcoins, or is it $20,000, or is it like just $12,000?
It's just the price you pay at the time. Like, if you pay for, like, let's say you pay for a $10,000 car, and, you know, Bitcoin, let's say Bitcoin is exactly $10,000 right now. You trade that one Bitcoin for that car. You know, the transaction's complete and final. You have your car, they have their Bitcoin. Let's say tomorrow Bitcoin is worth $12,000. You bought your car for the $10,000, which was the one Bitcoin. Like, I guess it is kind of a tricky question. I guess it's just you valued the car at $10,000.
And you valued the Bitcoin at $10,000.
Yeah, and you used the Bitcoin as the medium of exchange for it. So, and that was at that time. Like, you know, Laszlo, the guy who bought the 10,000 Bitcoin, he paid 10,000 Bitcoin for 2 pizzas, you know. That's what he valued it at that time. He's not today saying, oh, where's that guy I paid? I want my money back. I don't value that pizza, you know, at however many billions it is now. The transaction was just set and final the day, the exact second that he made it, if that makes sense.
Daniel?
Go on.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Jess.
I'm just thinking, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go, Anastasia. Again.
Okay. I'm just thinking, okay, then, like, when will the world start using Bitcoin? So, like, when it will lose its volatility, so, like, I can actually use it as the actual money exchange, like, with my friends, go shopping with it, so the government does not control what I'm doing and does not control inflation and does not control the economy and...
Well, you can do that today. It's just I forget what the statistics is, but it's like less than 1% of the population uses Bitcoin. So the price of Bitcoin is right now roughly near $10,000. And that's what all of us collective Bitcoiners have priced Bitcoin at this current moment. So like you can buy things right now for, you know, $10,000 per Bitcoin, but because it's such a small market and because it's less than 1% of the total population in it, like that we believe that the best bet is for you to hold your Bitcoins for a while until you get to a price point that you're comfortable selling those Bitcoins, because once you sell them, they're gone. And so you don't want to regret, you know, your purchases. So we like to look at it that with the money we're putting into Bitcoin, we're not trying to touch it for a few years. It's like how Pierre Rochard says Bitcoin's the greatest savings technology that humans have ever known. So we look at it as Bitcoin, we save in Bitcoin. And if we need money to use everyday life, then we'll use the dollars. But if our Bitcoins appreciate, so say our Bitcoins go to 20K tomorrow, it just skyrockets. Well, then a lot of us may start thinking about spending more Bitcoins. And even though it'll be volatile, a lot of people will be okay with that because they've already made, you know, double their money or triple their money or 100 times their money. So to them, the opportunity cost doesn't mean that much. That, you know, the price difference doesn't mean much because they've already made so much. But for us, like we're relatively newcomers to Bitcoin, so we don't have those mega gains. So we look at it as like, if we can hold it for 4 years, then we'll be able to buy, you know, a lot more things than we could today. And so like, while we can buy things with Bitcoin today, the best bet and the best thing for our future is to hold these Bitcoins for as long as we can, because we understand that there's only 21 million and there's not that many people that are into Bitcoin yet, but we believe that most people will get into Bitcoin because they see what we see and the price will go up. And so one thing of money is holding its value. So we're so used to in our fiat culture using the dollar fiat money that the only way to use money is to spend it. But one of the attributes of money is holding its value. And that's where we're in the process of Bitcoin. Like we say, first it's a store of value, then a means of exchange, and then a unit of account. Well, Bitcoin is kind of doing all those three things all at once, but currently it's acting more like a store of value. And as you can see, you know, it went from 20K to 3K, and while that was really volatile, now we're going into 10K. And so if you bought some Bitcoins at 3K, now up at 9, 10K, your value has increased by 3 times. And even though you're still technically down 50% from 20K, if you hold it long enough and Bitcoin continues to do what it does, then you'll most likely break even, if not double and triple it, like once it breaks all time high. So it's just, it's different attributes of money happening all at once.
One thing I want to add in real quick is, you said, like, when will people start using it more of as a medium of exchange? After a while, and we've seen in Venezuela, El Salvador, and these villages, it's going to come to a point where people are going to be like, I don't want U.S. dollars. This shit is worthless. I want to store my money in a better, you know, vehicle. And that vehicle is going to be Bitcoin. Or at least we believe it's going to be Bitcoin. And, you know, these shit fiat currencies that go to zero, like Optimus said earlier, you know, people were using it as, you know, it's just scattered in the streets. It's completely worthless. Like, nobody wants it. And then these villages in El Salvador start running completely on Bitcoin. If the market demands for a better money, which is Bitcoin, the people, it's going to drive people away from the US dollar and into Bitcoin. And 10 years from now, you know, I'm thinking, and I'm sure a lot of other people will be thinking, that I'm not going to walk around and spend US dollars. I'm going to walk around and most likely I'll be spending Bitcoin through what we believe.
It sounded like what you were talking about was a unit of account for like things being priced in Bitcoin. You know, when you're buying your car for 2 Bitcoin, like that property of money, that's going to emerge, but it won't be for a long time. So most likely, you know, the goods that you'll see will be priced in dollars, since it's like part of the law that the Fed has to maintain consistent pricing. So they manage the supply of dollars just to maintain stable prices. But Bitcoin doesn't have that flaw. So, you know, the supply rate is constant and, you know, known ahead of time. So,
well, just so for, I use Satoshis as a unit of account already. We're just ahead of the curve.
Yeah, right. So, you know, like I know that the buying power of my Bitcoin today, like I think I'm quite confident that the buying power of my Bitcoin will go up over time. You know, I don't know what the buying power will be tomorrow, but I've got much more confidence what it will be in several years from now than I do what the price will be tomorrow.
Or we could look at it another way. The dollar loses 2% a year. So every year it's losing 2%. But we still consider the dollar being stable because if I trade in $1, one Washington, I can technically buy something with that one Washington. But over time, that $1 is just getting eroded slowly but surely. And while Bitcoin seems to be very volatile because we can watch the price move and there's no Federal Reserve to keep the price constant, it goes up and down. But if like we like to say, if you zoom out, the Bitcoin price will go up and you'll be able to buy more with that quote unquote dollar. And so that's why there's that heuristic. There's all the Bitcoiners telling you, like, the smartest thing for you to do is just hold your Bitcoins and save in Bitcoins, because tomorrow your dollar will be worth more instead of worth less. And it's just like, it takes a little time to switch your mental paradigm and consider Bitcoin as your money. Like right now, I can pretty much guess that you consider your dollar like your money. But for us Bitcoiners here, our money is Bitcoin. So I value, like I was joking earlier, like I value my wealth in Bitcoin. You know, I of course watch the Bitcoin price and I get excited when the price of Bitcoins go up, but I consider my wealth in Satoshis. I have a certain amount of sats and that's how I look at my wealth, whereas most people still look at their wealth in dollars. So, you know, some person may have $10,000, and if that's the price of Bitcoin, well, yeah, my Bitcoin's worth $10,000, but I have 100 million Satoshis. And so it's just like a fully different mental paradigm. And at a certain point, you'll probably get there. But in the meantime, you're still thinking about dollars as the most stable money in the world because all of the world's using it. But that's not how I see the future playing out. We see with all the turmoil going on in the United States, there's a lot of economic, you know, economic upheaval. There's a lot of civil upheaval. And so who knows what the price of the dollar will be tomorrow. But in it may look like the dollar is staying stable, but it's really losing its value over time. And one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin, so to speak. And so we value our wealth in Bitcoin. Well, I personally, but I know most of the people in here do too. Are we confusing you more, or is this making it any clearer?
I mean, I need a little bit more time to digest everything.
Yeah, no, it'll take a while.
It's a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
I had a lot of other questions. Let me think about something. So if now we are gonna use Bitcoin, let's say like suddenly all the people in the world start using Bitcoin, so there's no more need for banks, right? And if people need a loan, where do they go to get a loan?
Well,
how do they ensure how does a lender ensure that someone is paying him and all that kind of stuff?
Well, there'll still be banks. There won't be a central bank. There won't be someone controlling the price of the dollar or printing more dollars. So we'll still probably have banks in the future where people can hold their Bitcoins. And when it comes to lending, while most of us may be like, yeah, you probably shouldn't be using Bitcoin lending right now. There's already services that will lend you either dollars or Bitcoins. But it's just a risky proposition because Bitcoin is becoming the hardest money in the world. It's becoming the best money in the world. The risk of you losing those Bitcoins is very high because if you lend your Bitcoins at the current moment, it's probably going to be lent out to a trader, and that trader can lose his Bitcoins very quick on like a high leverage trade. And so they'll still be Bitcoin lending, but we'll be on a different economic paradigm. We'll have a lot more savers, and so a lot of people will be able to, as we like to call it, bootstrap themselves. So they'll be saving a lot more instead of taking out a lot more loans, because our economy at the moment is built on a lot of debt, and Bitcoin isn't debt money. So in the future, you just have to go to someone that you trust, or someone that trusts you. Like, you'll have to put up some collateral, or you have to show them and prove to them that you'll be able to pay back those Bitcoins. Because if they give you those Bitcoins and you lose them, well, that guy is out of Bitcoins. They can't just print more. So in the future, there will be lending and there will be banks. But at the current moment, it's just a very risky thing because the price can swing so heavily that you may lose those Bitcoins and you can't ever return them.
Also, like, I like to think of kind of like what you said, is though there will be kind of less lending going on because Bitcoin, unlike the US dollar, isn't built around debt. Like, the US dollar pretty much needs debt to survive. Bitcoin is the complete opposite. It pretty much incentivizes people to save, and a lot of these people who take out loans right now for whatever it may be, credit cards, for a new car, a business loan, blah, blah, blah. In the future, if they're saving in Bitcoin, they may not need a loan. They may be able to just afford it themselves.
Yeah, it's actually an important point that most fiat monies are a form of debt that's owed to you. That's you as the dollar holder. I mean, if you look at a dollar bill, it'll say this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Whereas, Bitcoin is not a debt. Not a debt. So it's actually kind of risky to actually lend out your Bitcoin, because they might not be able to ever pay you back because the value of the Bitcoin goes up. So, you don't want the value of your debt to increase over time. So that's definitely something that you want to
Bitcoin for. Hey, yo, Hado.
Yo, what up, dude?
A lot of it comes down to versus. Well, I have my echo. Somebody can turn it down because
yeah, that's HODL.
So it comes down to Keynesian economics versus Austrian economics, not even Bitcoin versus dollar. So this is the difference that you need to understand about, you need like, to understand debt, about like debt versus image model. Yourself for a second. Maybe you guys want to cover the topic of like current services that do Bitcoin as a collateral loans, and how people were lending out Bitcoin on BlockFi and not doing it anymore because it's not the best company.
One thing I want to say is that Keynesian economics, which is what the U.S. dollar is built on, is it's so stupid. And like that book I recommended you earlier, The Bitcoin Standard, if you read that, you'll understand it more. But it's just everything's focused on debt, and that does not drive a nation or humanity. It doesn't drive progress forward. The only progress that goes forward is Austrian economics, which is focused more on savings.
You need to read the Creature from Jekyll Island. That is a really great book, or grab it on Audible. I'm like 3/4 of the way through it, and it really is mind-blowing how absolutely horrendously fake. And it's not just, you know, people think, you know, it's funny, right? People think it's just the US dollar, but, you know, the Canadian dollar is the same exact thing, you know? It's just another central bank. They all have a central issuing, you know, agency.
And the book that Nick is talking about, I sent it to you in Russian. It's called
Yes,
same book. The name, though, like they translated names so weird that I wouldn't recognize it. The same book. It's kind of like
history of money.
History of money. Yeah, that's how it's called in Russian.
But we can talk about the BlockFi thing. It's like I was saying earlier. People were lending out their bitcoins, and they were getting a 6% return on those bitcoins. But what we all think is happening is that they're using those bitcoins to short the Bitcoin price, and so they're probably some of it is most likely getting liquidated, which means that they're losing those bitcoins. And so we're still not sure if they're fully solvent yet or if they have all those bitcoins. But just recently they had a little episode where they got hacked and they basically gave up all their customers' information, and so they lost how much their customers own and their home addresses, and they basically just gave up all the information on their customers. And so that's one of many reasons why you probably shouldn't be lending at this moment, because one, you may lose those bitcoins, and two, they might not keep your information safe. So then you kind of have like a target on your head, and then you have to worry about your actual physical safety. And if Hoddle figures out his audio, he could probably go in a little deeper on that one. But yeah, it seems to be doing something.
What I'm thinking that in the future, let's say people like us, they will have a lot of bitcoins or satoshis. Then other people that start like jumping into the system, they do not have enough money. And then let's say they want to buy a house or again a car. They do not have enough money to buy it. So they need to go somewhere to someone and borrow some satoshis or bitcoins to buy whatever they want to buy.
Yeah, it'll be the same as dollars. It's just that, and most likely in the future, instead of the person paying back that loan in dollars, they'll have to figure out a way to pay back that loan in bitcoins or satoshis. So in the future, you know, if say you loan me a Bitcoin right now and then said, well, you don't have to pay me back
for 5 to 10 years. Well, right now that price is like $10,000, but in the future it could be $100,000. So that means that I'd have to pay you a lot more purchasing power back. And so you'd have to assess the risk and see whether that person would actually be able to pay you back those Bitcoins, because in the future it'll be a lot harder to pay back these Bitcoins. So like if it's a short-term loan, then it might work out. But if it's a long-term loan, then, you know, you might not be lending out those Bitcoins to everybody because they won't be able to pay you those Bitcoins back unless they have a really high paying job.
So I just wanted to go back to that BlockFi thing. The other thing about those platforms is you're giving up ownership of your Bitcoin. It doesn't matter what they tell you. It doesn't matter if, to me anyways, it doesn't matter if they, you know, give you access with keys. The point is that you're moving your Bitcoin from your hardware wallet, if you're doing it right, and you're going to their platform. So at that point, you lose all control of that Bitcoin. And also, to talk about their loans, supposedly what they do is they do fiat loans against their Bitcoin. I personally don't know if that's true. I don't necessarily buy it, but I'm just saying supposedly that's how they're not, quote unquote, leveraging your Bitcoin. But once it's there, not yours.
Also, one of the things that's good about it is since Bitcoin has the open blockchain and it's a hard capped at 21 million. Where gold was flawed is if you deposited your gold in banks, no one really knew how much the banks had. So the banks were able to easily just overprint currency and, you know, do fractional reserve banking, having more fiat printed than there were reserves. Now, if let's say in the future, for some reason, they try to do that, you store your Bitcoin in a bank and they give you, you know what I mean? Like they give you a paper currency in exchange. Don't know why you would do that, but let's just use that as an example. If they started mass printing money, everything's on the open blockchain and you can just say, something's wrong, something's messed up, they're printing more money than there is Bitcoin, and that's a big problem, and you know it can be nipped in the bud right away. I really hope that didn't make you more confused, because like where we got today with fiat currency is fiat currency isn't backed by anything. It's not backed by gold or anything like it used to be, and it kind of, what we have today as money is kind of, you know, a descendant from, you know, gold, which was backed by, I mean, fiat currency that was backed by gold, and then before that it was just gold, and before that it was seashells and blah blah blah, whatever else was used as money.
Okay.
I know that's like a lot to take in, like, for the past 2 hours.
Yeah. Did we make you more confused, or did we clear up any of your concerns?
Like now I have even more questions.
That's good though.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I wish somebody like a few years ago just walked me through all that and I would get a lot more valuable question, not the questions that I got back then. It's pretty cool. You guys doing God's work.
It's not that it's making me more confused. Now that I know more information, now I start thinking, okay, but what if this? What if this? So it creates like even more questions for me to ask.
Well, that's
the
rapid
journey.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing. That's basically how we all got to this point. You asked some questions, And then you realize, like, okay, that's not really that big of a concern. And then you get another question and you're like, okay, but what about this? And then you realize, well, that's really not a concern. And you just kind of keep going down to all these questions until you get to a point where you're like, oh, wow, like Bitcoin is money. Bitcoin is a store of value. Bitcoin will be or is a means of exchange right now, and it will be the world reserve currency of the world. But you can continue asking questions. I think we can still go. Yeah.
Let me just take it in.
The rabbit hole is deep, and you know, right, all of us have spent like 6 months like reading and researching all we could, because it's like, first it's like, what is this weird thing called Bitcoin? And you know, ask a couple of questions, then read more, have more questions, and you just keep on going.
Yeah, you know? I've been in the space for a few years now. I still don't understand everything completely, and I'm still asking more questions. And that really is the way, like Joe just said. It makes you feel better once you finally start to understand something. And then you get to go on to a new topic, and it's just the picture Joe just sent in the chat with the mind exploding. That's what I was literally just trying to describe, but I didn't know how to say it without sounding like an idiot.
Are you in the chat, Anastasia? It says it's like...
Yes, I'm reading that.
Yeah, it's like getting into Bitcoin, this will never work, and two, why isn't this dead yet, and three, oh, this is interesting, and four, you go down the rabbit hole.
Maybe back in the days when I first heard about Bitcoin, I mean, it didn't catch my interest. It's like, oh, it's just the hype, whatever, but we'll get over it. Then this made me think more and more.
I'd say almost every single one of us went through that. You know, I can tell you, I was exposed to Bitcoin at least 5 or 6 times before I actually went to try and use it. So it's completely normal. And believe me, you only arrive at Bitcoin once you destroy all those other ideas. It's a real process of elimination, because when you're not understanding the whole point of sound money and the fact that there is no head to Bitcoin that for a government or any entity to cut off, so it's completely censorship resistant, it's decentralized, it offers all of the exact same qualities of gold, but you know, digitized and in a way you'd say like a hybrid type of asset. So it's absolutely remarkable. And you really just, you know, going back to some older points, like Nick said, you know, that it was, you know, like the slowness is good. It absolutely is, because to be honest, you looking for it to be a base of the digital money going forward. So you want it to work. You want it to be stable. You know, as a person who, you know, who does, you know, troubleshoot code, I'm telling you, like, you definitely don't want to be moving fast and breaking things. Not with money.
Wisdom.
Because I used to work for the bank, and I do not like banks, and I do not like the whole how economics works. And I'm like, okay, since there is no solution to it, I'll just, like, be in the system. Then when you start thinking, okay, but there are some tools that can solve this issue, and I start thinking, is this really going to solve this problem, or is there any alternatives to this? This is my whole point.
Well, that's interesting that you come from the bank, so you definitely have like a inside view on how the banking system works or doesn't work. And yeah, like what we're all saying is you kind of just like ask all the questions, and then at a certain point you kind of just keep crossing them off, and you're like, oh wow, like maybe Bitcoin does work, or then you go like a couple more weeks and you get some more questions. You're like, oh, maybe it doesn't work. And then you answer those questions and then you're like, no, like Bitcoin works. And then at a certain point, you just kind of get to the point where you just stop doubting it. And you're like, yeah, I'm just saving in Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin's my money. How many sats do I have? Like,
yeah, like first thing out of college, I was working at a call center and handling class action lawsuits, just providing information to people. And most of the cases that they put me on were banking class action lawsuits, where you know banks would reorganize transactions in highest to lowest dollar order, so you would overdraft sooner and they would be able to charge more overdrafts. And that made me so mad. And then I discovered Bitcoin. It's like, wow, it's like impossible for someone to cheat you in this way at such a like system level.
Yeah, I've seen banks were charging people so much. Oh my God, just to cash a check for a non-customer, just $8. Shears check, $15. Like, this is too much.
It's criminal that they would take advantage of people with literally no money. And,
yes.
And yeah, so that exactly. Pushed me to Bitcoin. Yeah.
Because the people that had a lot of money with the bank, they did not have to pay all those fees. However, those people that have a lot of money, for them, $8 is nothing. But then someone who is making $100 a week, it's a lot of money just to cash a check.
Yeah, there's no like alternative other than to storing, either you store cash under your mattress or you store your funds in a bank, which means you're relying on the bank to someday in the future give you your money back. And you're also trusting that the central bank isn't going to print a whole bunch of currency and devalue your savings. And just all these levels of trust, like you have to use this bank system that's going to take 3 to 7 business days to like send money to another bank. You know, it's like all of these issues and like Bitcoin is far more transparent. You're able to see what's going on at every step of the way.
And
you
know,
wire transfer. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you only trust math. Like as long as you believe in math, then that's all you really have to trust in regards to Bitcoin, because it's all mathematical crypto algorithms, and you don't have to trust a human to not mess up with your money. You just got to, you know, trust that 2 + 2 still equals 4, of course, in higher level math. But yeah, you can continue.
Yeah, I'm just saying to transfer from one bank to another for the same day, it's called wire transfer, but wire transfer is like $30. I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of money to transfer just your funds from one bank to another bank. And on apps like Cash App, I'm not sure what is the limit for that, but there is a limit. While on a Bitcoin, you do not have a limit on how much you want to transfer one person to another.
Yeah, I think the highest value transaction, it like happened not too long ago, was like $300 million, and it was like completed for under $1 in fees, or $1 worth of Bitcoin in fees that were paid to the network, you know, paid to miners.
Mm-hmm. Crazy stuff.
Well, do you want to continue this conversation in our actual show tomorrow? Because I'm sure you still have more questions. And tomorrow is we're recording again tomorrow.
Whatever you're up to, guys.
Yeah, like Nick said. Well, so technically our show usually happens on Thursday, but I am recording this, so you know, if you give us permission, we can upload this as well. But our show, yeah, well, like halfway through is like Nick's like, record this is good. So I have this recorded, so we can I can send it to you and we can look over it. But usually we have the live show, and I wrote down a lot of the questions that you asked, and we were going to interview Coin Icarus and talk about how he introduces Bitcoin to like the noobs and pre-coiners. But we can definitely get you on tomorrow and continue this conversation, and maybe you have more more questions tomorrow that we can dive in deeper.
Yeah, I mean, thank you guys so much. I mean, spending so much time with me, explaining so much information, like, just mind me blown.
This is literally, like, this is the idea of the whole show. Our friend basically told me and Nick to start this show, and he's like, if you guys could just get people that are new to Bitcoin and just sit with them and answer their questions, I think that would be very valuable. And me and Nick were like, yeah, okay, we can do it. And it's been usually like just me, Nick, and our friends, like the friends that you see on the show, and we just kind of we'll just like scour the internet or our friends and see what questions they're asking us, and we just kind of put some questions together and try to answer them as best as we can. But we'd love to, you know, have more people come on and have like a two-way conversation where it's not just us talking, you know, talking at someone. We could try to hash out whether they understand what's going on. So yeah, we'd love for you to come back tomorrow, and you know,
and every week.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
I have one last question.
Go for it.
Why is everyone so aggressive on Twitter?
Well, like, yeah, you want to go, Nick, or I can do a short one? Well, it's like,
you can go.
It's like I said earlier, most scammers are really, really nice to you because they want to be nice to you to get your money. And most Bitcoiners kind of come off as assholes because we're so tired of the scammers, and we sometimes get a lot of the same questions, and so they have short fuses, and this like Bitcoin's precious to us, so we don't want anyone messing with our money. And so if it seems like you're attacking Bitcoin, then people are going to be extremely ruthless to you, because this is how we value our wealth, this is our livelihood. And if you're coming to, you know, destroy that, then you deserve the worst. So sometimes we get some casualties, and they're extremely mean and assholes to people that are curious and really don't know what's going on. And so, yeah, sometimes they come off as assholes, but it's really like tough love, and it's just, they believe in Bitcoin so much that they don't want anyone to ruin it, and they consider it our best hope for humanity moving forward. And so yeah, if they're a little mean sometimes, well, you know, that kind of sucks for that person, but at least they're not destroying Bitcoin. But see, as you can tell, we're a bunch of sweethearts, and we're actually really nice if we know that you want to learn with us.
Just like on Twitter, everyone is, I'm more of an Instagram user. I'm a girl, you know. And on Instagram, I mean, on Twitter, everyone is like showing their opinion, like, what?
Yeah, Twitter's as it's been said before, it's a battleground of ideas. So it's like, if you think of Twitter like a war room, then you'll start to get that, oh, you know, people are very opinionated, and they're just battling ideas out, and they're doing it in, what is it, like 290 characters. So sometimes you got to be short and sweet to the point, and you just try to cut through a lot of bullshit. And yeah, it gets pretty ruthless out there. But now you'll kind of, I probably start to understand that it's not like anyone really hates other people. They're trying to, they're just arguing out ideas. It's all about the idea. So yeah, people can get, you know, quote unquote mean. It's not as pretty as Instagram. It's not all flowers like Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the whole world is like all in pain, you know. Then I come on Twitter, everyone is like fighting, like it's a war.
Yeah, it's a literal war of ideas.
Bitcoin Twitter's a wonderful place, though.
A lot of smart people, that's what I can say, because from what I see on the stories now on Instagram, like, a bunch of idiots.
Agreed. Well, Nick, you want to say something?
No, I'm good. I was just going to ask you, do you want to end the recording here or keep talking or... I think now would be a kind of good time to end it.
Yeah.
And then we can always pick it up tomorrow again.
All right. Well, yeah. Till next time, I'm going to stop the recording right now.